This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
I am humbled and honored to fill in for the legendary Paul W. What a treat, and I'm excited to be here. I think we still have summer going on, so it's a double win here for me today. I got to tell you, it was one of those weekends where you could have just sat in your couch if you didn't want to get out, but the sun was beautiful, and just watched sports all weekend. How great was it? We had the Tigers, we had the Lions, we had U of M. It was amazing. And with this, I had to get the inside take since I had the honor and privilege of doing so with Anthony Bellino, co-host of Sports Wrap with Lomas Brown and Anthony Bellino weeknights, our color analyst for the Detroit Lions Radio Network. I got to tell you, AB, you with me, my man?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm here. Going from Uncle Paul to Uncle Todd. I love this. This is fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. The treat is mine. Seriously. So you had to be just like riveted by what was going on today with or this weekend with what was happening on TV. I mean, Saturday night, we got the Tigers winning, extra innings. What else? And we got the Lions. So give us a little breakdown from your perspective.
I mean, look, this is exactly what we want. And, honestly, we had a little exhibition hockey, right? I mean, we had our last preseason hockey game with the Red Wings winning Saturday night in overtime, 6-5 over the Leafs. We've got the Pistons, the Detroit basketball tipping things off tonight for their first preseason tilt against the Memphis Grizzlies in Memphis at 8 o'clock. Of course, we have the Tigers splitting their games in Seattle, boy, dramatic fashion. Last night, and I'll tell you what, Julio Rodriguez, I mean, you talk about clutch there, and I know it was fun for about 5 minutes when Torque hit that game-tying double to, you know, move a couple runners,
two,
but the chance, I mean, the chance for the Seattle crowd to witness their first home playoff win since 2001, to hear the crowd chanting Julio's name, and then for him to get up in the box and then deliver, the game-breaking RBI, that was stuff the theater's made of. I mean, that's a moment that he'll remember for the rest of his life, and something will live in Seattle sports lore for the rest of those fans' lives. I mean, 47,000 strong in attendance there, that was awesome. And then, of course, the Lions. I mean, you beat the Browns and the Bengals in the same week that the Tigers send the Guardians home. I mean, just Michigan dominance over Ohio. What a beautiful week to be alive. This is fantastic.
This is true. All right, so just one take, just from the fans' perspective of Seattle. I mean, I'm watching the game, and you actually saw a wife take off her husband's glasses and give him a hug because he was crying and how intense for their first victory in postseasons in 25 years. That was a bit much for me. But it was a made-for-TV or made-for-movie game. It was one of those games where, seriously, to bring one home for them or win one at home for them was pretty amazing. I want to go to the Lions. I got to talk to you about the Lions.
Oh, yeah.
You got to love – and Dan Campbell, I wish we could get him to coach the Ryder Cup. But Dan Campbell, to bring in what he brings in – and the enthusiasm, he says, I'm not going to get down on a win. There's some things we got to correct. I don't know if they played for 60 minutes. They may have played for 52 and took 8 minutes off, you know, when they allowed 21 points in there. But the game, I think, two things. One, defense. And two, how big is David Montgomery? I mean, oh, my gosh. To throw a touchdown and score a touchdown, and every time, if I just been watching him, and every time he just grinds and grinds. I think the Lions are as good as ever. What say you?
They might be better than advertised, and I've been saying this for a couple of weeks. You know, everybody made such a big deal when Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn left. It's like, oh, my God, the coordinators are gone. You know, Todd Flood, everybody forgot how to play football. You know, it death, doom, and destruction, right? I mean,
right. Nobody,
we're going to lose every game this season. Look at the schedule. And for a couple of weeks, I've contested that, you know what, this team might actually be a little bit better. I want to give credit first to Kelvin Shepard, the defensive coordinator, because this defense is completely different. And obviously, Aiden Hutchinson being healthy, I mean, you see the impact. I mean, this guy, he had 3 sacks yesterday and 2 of them were called back, one on a defensive holding from Terrion Arnold. Poor guy, just got to keep his hands himself. Like, see a little handsy out there. Let's just reach out and touch somebody. And then the other one was because Hutch lined up in the, he was offside, lined up in the neutral zone.
Neutral zone.
But I'm telling you what, the entire game, you could tell, like, he was going after that sack. Like, he was going, he wanted one so bad, and he eventually got it on the strip sack, and that was just awesome. Cincinnati ends up recovering the football, you know, so be it. Oh, well. But you turn over Jake Browning three times because he felt the pressure, and I think Kelvin Shepard's done such a good job of dialing that up. Our linebackers are flying across the field. Alex Anzalone, Derek Barnes, Jack Campbell. I mean, for so long, we have been looking for impact players at that second level, at that linebacker position, and those guys are just doing a hell of a job. You can actually catch, shameless plug here, Alex Anzalone. He'll join the Mitch Albom program later on tonight here on 760 WJR, so that'll be fantastic.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be great. And then offensively, you mentioned David Montgomery. I heard in the postgame, you know, Sam Laporta gets a game ball from Dan Campbell, and the one thing he says that he loves about this team is that everybody's so selfless, and that's exactly what it is. You know, yesterday was Demo's game. He gets to play in front of his home fans of Cincinnati, where he was a quarterback. Obviously, they did the story about his sister being paralyzed in 2024, and she gets to be there in front and watch her brother, you know, play the game that he played, not only a touchdown rushing, but also a touchdown passing as well. Just simply sensational. It really is a we before me type of mindset and mentality for this group, and that's what makes them so successful. You know, I saw some people talking about J-Mo on the internet because he only had one catch, I think, for 9 yards. But if you noticed on the big catch that Sam Laporta had down the right sideline, exactly, he's out there looking for somebody to hit. He's going to talk about reaching out and touching somebody. If you want the rock, you got to block. And even though he's not getting the volume of touches, he still stays checked in, and that is a sign of maturity within that specific group, that position group as a whole, wide receiver, known as a diva, known as a me position. We don't have that on that team, and we are so blessed and fortunate. And we survived a game in which Taylor Decker, you know, didn't play at left tackle. So I think that that is A-OK right there, partner.
No question about it. You mentioned the linebackers. You mentioned the D. I got to tell you, they were flying around. I don't know, when you saw Derek Barnes get that safety and what he did, the move on the guard, to get around the guard and get that safety, it was unbelievable. I mean, he had the guy planted, and it was just amazing to me what they've done. But to your point, no I in team. You could take these coaches and take them around the country and put them in every executive board meeting and have them talk about, you're only as strong as your weakest link. You're only as strong, you know. I mean, they just build this team. And that's what I love about it. And you hit the nail on the head, the selflessness of it. But I got goosebumps thinking about how good our lines are, how great Detroit's going to be this Tuesday, tomorrow night. You know, I'm sure you're going to be there. But the big game, Detroit's going to be just – I don't know. It's epic right now what's happening in our city with our sports.
You know, and you think about it, too. By the way, Derek Barnes, we should have filed some sort of a assault claim against Arizona. You go back to his knee injury last year. It was a feint. It was a cheap shot by the tight end from Arizona. I'm still angry about that because I love Derek Barnes.
Right.
You know, he just chopped him low. But you think back to the NFL draft. You think back to, you know, Dan Campbell getting hired. You think back to all the positive momentum. J.B. Bickerstaff, what he's done with the Pistons. A.J. Hinch, how he's turned around the Tigers. You think about all this positive momentum for the city economically. You think about our sports team. We're on the rise, Todd Flood. Look, I'm getting the juices flowing right now. It's only 12:15. And I got some porterhouse steaks I got to cut over here. Thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate you.
My brother. You be well, bud. I look forward to hearing you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with Focus and Todd Flood filling in for Paul W. What a treat. What a pleasure. Just after this. I must tell you, sitting up here in the tower overlooking Detroit is just, it's breathtaking, one, to see all of Detroit and Wayne County. It's humbling to sit in for Paul W., but also to have some of the greatest guests we have, I think, in our region, our state. And one of those people just so happens to be, you don't hear a lot all the time. He's, you know, but he's doing the people's work. Warren Evans is with us, the Wayne County CEO. Mr. Evans, you with us, Chief?
Todd, I'm here, and good to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I have to ask you, and I know, you know, in our country right now, and we see what's going on in D.C., we see that there is the clash of not getting a budget passed, but you have been, skilled for, I don't know, how many times, over 11 times now, I think, of getting a passed budget. And one of the things near and dear to my heart, because I grew up in law enforcement, as you well know, You work across the aisles to make things happen. You know, if there was a message out there, one, how to get something like this passed, and two, how difficult and how much time in advance are you working on these, you know, of all, pulling all the people together and putting budgets together, and again, being successful at passing a budget?
Well, Todd, it comes from having a great staff, too, that helps to connect with the legislative body and, you know, state legislature and others. I think that the condition we were in initially 10 or 11 years ago had a lot to do with creating a willingness that we got to fix this. You know,
right.
We're not bankruptcy. What are we going to do here? Oh, my God. And I think the approach that we took 10 years ago still resonates now in terms of the relationship with the county commission, and understanding that, you know, we're trying to manage what we need to manage in the county for the best interest of the people who pay taxes in the county. And it really doesn't get much more complicated than that. You know, the county used to live off of what we would call budgetary, what is the word I'm looking for? Structural deficits in the budget, I think would be the best way to put it.
Sure.
Everybody knew when the budget passed that we're going to go over budget, and you try to fix it at the end of the year. And that just has never been my way of doing business. We're going to live within our means. Whatever we have in the general fund budget is what we're going to spend, or if lucky, not all of it. And so I think coming from that background, built a strong relationship with the stakeholders, and thank God it's still holding.
You know, it's just for the average person out there, it's kind of simple like running a house. You have so much income come into the checkbook, you know, can only have so much income, expenses going out. It's really that simple, right? You keep within the confines of what we have in the general budget. But one of the things that was always concerning to me, and something I've been reading about and hearing about, which I love to hear, is that our prosecutor's office, you know, there's no layoffs, there's no cuts. We actually have prosecutors, and, you know, we're the biggest county as far as population goes in the state of Michigan. There's a lot of needs out there, and that to me is something. Obviously, you have to work with all the people, all the constituents out there that run departments and the like that get funded from Wayne County. I would imagine, as you sit and probably want no part of what the feds are doing, what impact, if any, by budget constraints within Washington, D.C., and our national budget not going through, what is there something on the radar, on the Doppler Center here that you might be looking at that, you know, you're concerned about funding from the feds that may not get down to Wayne County?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the biggest problem is from where. There's no real path that you can follow. I mean, there seem to be ad hoc cuts and, you know, government shutdown and that sort of thing. So we're prepared that we're going to bleed. Where exactly we're going to bleed and how much, I don't know. But, you know, that's kind of what you try to run balanced budgets and reserves for the last 10 years. And we've had not only 10 years of balanced budgets, but we've also had surpluses. And so those are, they call it a rainy day fund, but, you know, I try to make sure that if the bottom falls out of something that's critical for the safety and security of this county, then we'll use that money. And as you know, as a former prosecutor, I did a little time in the prosecutor's office too. So I understand fundamentally what the prosecutor does, what the prosecutor needs, and understand the resource issues. I mean, a lot of times you have elected officials come to you and ask for things, but if you can't relate to it, you can't really critique it. It's sometimes problematic. We've been able to add to the prosecutor's office, and it's a good thing that we've got a prosecutor who handles it well and, you know, carries out her end of the bargain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, not many people think about, for whatever city you're living in, what assistant prosecutor is going down to the fourth floor to take care of my kid's case or someone's case, right? But making sure the funding's there. And Kim Worthy, no, she's, you know, within the confines, she does an amazing job. I have to guess though that with the feds having the issues they're having, you have to have plenty of staff meetings and what things might pop up. It's almost like whack-a-mole. You're not quite sure, but it probably is something that you have your staff on a lookout to make sure that citizens of our county don't have problems or are out of benefits, be it from, you know, health aid to you name it. I got to believe your staff is on the lookout every day.
No, absolutely. And we meet weekly to talk about just what progress or regress has happened since the last week. But yeah, I mean, you know, I look at the county as my job is to make sure it's as safe and secure as I can. And so public safety, public health, environmental justice, those are things that to me impact significantly the lives of folks here. And so when you have a rainy day fund and when you have the ability to move a little left or a little right, we're trying to make sure, first of all, that we get as much advance notice we can of cuts that will impact our citizenry, and secondly, be, you know, mobile enough to shift those funds and those resources to places to fill in holes that we think have to be filled in for the county to still be the county and the city, to still be strong, viable entities.
Right, right. Well, going to be a big undertaking in some plays because we just don't know what cuts might come your way from the federal government. But nice to have the rainy day fund. Nice that we have you, Warren Evans, steering the ship in this county and passing budgets for 10 plus 11 years in a row. And not only that, but be creating in ways at times surpluses. I mean, we may need you in Washington to help them out to figure this all out, but. Listen, my friend, always a pleasure having you on, and I look forward to us seeing each other again.
Look forward to it, Todd. Always good talking to you, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks. Thanks, my friend. We'll be back with Focus and Todd Flood sitting in for Paul W. Again, an incredible honor. We have some great guests, a great lineup coming, and I'm excited about it. We'll be right back just after this. We're back. And here's your chance to win $1,000. Text this hour's national keyword, SCORE, to 95819. That's SCORE to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. You can play five times each weekday for a chance to win. It's 5-K, a day on 760 WJR. So official rules and more info on WJR.com. I have to tell you, I got to meet our next guest, and I am so impressed. You know, we have some of the smartest people around in our town that have been working here, sometimes quietly behind the scenes. And now stepping out in front, and I got to tell you, one of the most impressive people in Detroit, in Michigan, in the Midwest, is the new CEO of Bedrock, Jared Fleischer. Jared, you with me, my friend?
How could I miss that? Well, of an introduction, man. Thank you.
Well, I speak the truth. So I have to tell you, I just had Warren Evans on, and then. Prior to that, AB, we were talking about the Lions and the like. And the first thing I wanted to throw by you, how excited are you for what's happening in the city of Detroit, especially what's going to happen with the Tigers coming in tomorrow, the playoffs, how our Lions are doing. Now we got the Pistons taking off. I mean, there's a vibe going on that all is well in the world here in our metropolitan city.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm convinced, not just because I'm a homer, that the Lions are the best team in football. It's an interesting year where a lot of the marquee teams that you thought were going to be great, you know, the Ravens are 1-4. I'll tell you what, man, I don't know that anybody is playing better football and putting up more points than the Lions. Obviously, the energy that brings is is second to none. You know, the Tigers, you know, held their own out in Seattle. You know, they could have won both of those games. They won the first game in extra innings. They're coming home to fill Comerica, to fill our streets as we root the Tigers through the playoffs. You're right, the Pistons, you know, deep playoff run last year, you know, could have even beat the Knicks. There is so much energy. You add, you know, all that coming together. You've got, you know, the holidays coming up. You've got Hudson's opening. You've got all the new developments that are happening. You've got more retail on the streets of downtown Detroit than you've had in 70 years, highlighted by the Apple Store and so much more. You've really got an exciting time here in our city.
I really think so, and a lot owed to Bedrock for all the work you guys do. I had a small tour of the new Hudson building. How exciting is that for Bedrock? And everything going to plan?
Absolutely. So I'll kind of talk about it from a personal standpoint. Before I came here to Detroit and been here for about 15 years, I was working in Washington, D.C., and I would do a lot of work in our, literally in the Capitol building. And every time I would go to the Capitol, you know, magnificent dome, it would never get old. It would be awe-inspiring every time I see it. And I find myself, you know, with the same experience with Hudson's. I happen to live, you know, in Brush Park, right across from Little Caesars Arena. And I walk to work, you know, most mornings, walk home and walk by Hudson's. And it doesn't get old. You know, every time I look at
That's
it, I'm
cool.
Like, this is, Dan has really built, an extraordinary landmark for the city. And then we couldn't be more excited about, you know, what's going in it. We got great retail on the ground floor. Aloe is open. It's killing it. Actually, Aloe is opening. You know, a bunch of Aloe stores across the world open on the same day. And I hope I'm allowed to say this, but the Detroit store was the best performing one. Tecovas, Western Wear, Leather, you know, about to open, coming up very soon. The Department, which is the, you know, incredible event space on the second and third floors, best place to get married, have a corporate function, big old holiday party, just extraordinary space. You know, we've seen that already attract big national conferences. That's humming. General Motors will be moving into its new world headquarters and the office space above it, beginning of next year. We've got a rooftop restaurant and bar concept that's coming.
Wow.
Nick Gilbert Way, which is the public plaza. We're going to have some really special, exciting announcements coming up soon about how that's going to be an incredible programmed asset for the community. And then the beautiful tower is going to have a world-class hotel. Dan hates the word world-class, by the way. So I should say an incredible hotel, beautiful hotel. But it's going to help our tourism. It's going to help us attract things like, you know, the Final Four and future conventions. Just extraordinary hotel going in the tower, and then condos above it. Really, just an incredible mixed use project that, because it has so many different things going on, is going to be just an absolute engine for our city.
That is to say it lightly. You know, there was a great, what was it, Field of Dreams? Build it, they'll come. The fact of the matter is, I mean, when you have the bricks and mortar and you have the you know, hotel, condos, you have everything put together, all you're doing is bringing commerce and people to enjoy the great city of Detroit downtown. They can actually touch it. They can actually see it. I just had a friend tell me from San Francisco, we're happening back again. They were down for a while, but now with all the AI projects. And I told him, I said, listen, you want to see a city come back. And much credit to you, my friend, much credit to you and your team and your staff of bringing Detroit back, because I work and live down here all the time. This is where my office and my home is. You feel it, you see it. I've been here forever, it seems like, and you can just feel the pulse when you walk down here.
I know we got to go, but I got to give credit to our founder and chairman, Dan Gilbert.
Amen to that.
His commitment. He has a phrase, you will see it when you believe it. He believed it, and now everybody is seeing it. Thank you for the time, Todd.
Oh, thank you. And you're absolutely right, Dan Gilbert. Our hats off to him. Well, I got to tell you that you just got to come down here. You'll see it. You'll see it in Detroit. We'll be right back. with Focus and Paul W. Smith and Flood filling in for him. I got to tell you, I get the goosebumps sitting here just thinking of the history and thinking about, you know, where Paul W. and his journey has been, and me having the privilege and the honor to sit in for him is just, can't make it up. Who would have thunk it, kid from Allen Park? Anyway, my next guest, I have to tell you, we've been friends for a long time. He's the guy that protects us. He protects us in Oakland County and throughout, oftentimes in task force around the state. He's someone that is a pillar in the law enforcement community. And I wanted to talk to him specifically because of just the uptick in the craziness in the world for which we face with what just happened in Grand Blanc and what we've seen. None other than the Oakland County Sheriff, Mike Bouchard. Sheriff Bouchard, you with me, my friend?
I am, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. We're stealing one here of weather, and I love it. And it was a great weekend, and, you know, Wayne County was great. Detroit was great. I'm looking forward to the Tigers coming back, and yada, yada, yada. It's just a good time. But I do want to talk to you about a heavy topic for a moment. And I was headed down to the Sunday a week ago to the Lions game, and a friend calls me up from Genesee County in the prosecutor's office who's going to meet me at the game and says, I can't go. There's been a shooting up in a mass shooting up at the church in Genesee County. And I had to cringe. What is this place coming to? And I know that you are someone that is spearheaded task force and the like. I got to believe there's something here that you've, you got to put in implementation or think about. And what is that as we go forward as being, you know, the chief law enforcement guy for Oakland County?
Yeah, it's, as you said, it's crazy times, and it seems like it's nonstop. I mean, it's exhausting emotionally and physically to everybody, I think, to see this happening around the country, around the world. You know, they saw the attack of the Jewish facility in London, about the same time frame. So it's just things you have to do and be prepared for, think about in this world, and that's what we're doing. So, you know, we have previously taught classes to houses of worship on things they need to think about, things they should include in their emergency security and action plans. And we're going to do another summit like that again. We already had that in process, tragically, before Grand Blanc happened. And we, as you know, responded to Grand Blanc with a lot of resources, and we're still doing what we can to help with our peer-to-peer program. So it's something we were already planning on and thinking about. We've updated, you know, our email list. And anybody that's listening that's in a house of worship in Oakland County, if you're not on our email list, email us at OCSO@oakgov.com, Oakland County Sheriff's Office, OCSO@oakgov.com, and we can get you on that list. But we're going to invite everybody and lay out, you know, the kind of the things they should be thinking about, planning for, and scale it to their facility depending on how in-depth they want to go. But at the very least, they need to have an emergency action plan for all hazards, whether it's an active assailant, whether it's a tornado or a fire. What do you do? Where do you go? How do you respond and react? Who's in charge of that? Who trains that? All of those things need to be thought out in advance, because in the midst of an emergency, that's not when you make a plan. So that's what we're going to be teaching. That's what we encourage people, houses of worship, businesses, schools. We encourage and teach that to everybody, because that's sadly the kind of world that we have to think about and be prepared for.
Yeah, and it seems to me that there is the echoing or the trumpeting, if you will, of sound and noise out there that just, I don't know, exacerbates these crazy actors, these And one of the things that scares me most is our lack of mental health, where are we treating a great majority of the people that need mental help? Now, the guy up in Grand Blanc, I understand he was a war vet, had some serious mental health issues, but, where was he being treated, if at all? And most of the time, you know, we don't have great treatment facilities. And if we do, they're overwhelmed. So
yeah, without question, we need a more robust, full gamut mental health system, inpatient, outpatient, all of that. But probably one of the most important things that we all collectively can do to get in front of these, what we would call left of the bang, is to share information. Because people that are in a position to see or hear something, most of the time, 99% of the time, are not law enforcement. They're family, friends, fellow students, teachers, things like that. And you need to share that information. I mean, we interdicted, I'm on this national major county sheriff's intelligence thread, and you know, we share information and pertinent information about threats and things like that. And you know, about a week or two ago, somebody shared some information on that thread, was non-specific where it was. Everybody started talking about it, looking more, digging more, kind of found out the jurisdiction it seemed to be coming from, sent it to them. They actually got deeper into it, investigated it, and they actually arrested a young man that had already written a manifesto, had assembled weapons, was planning to shoot up a school. So we got in front of it because people were sharing information.
There you go.
And that's the only way we're going to get in front of these things. Every one of these things that I have studied for many years, somebody saw or heard something that was concerning, and it didn't get shared in a robust way. The splash pad shooter, for example, people had seen him walking about, muttering to himself, talking to people that weren't there with weapons in his hands.
Gosh.
Those are the kinds of things that need to be shared so that there can be intervention at that inflection point before it starts.
Amen to that.
And, yeah. And that's pretty much true in every one of these circumstances. When you look through this, and I've got some information about the Grand Blanc thing too, pretty much all these things have inflection points that we just all collectively have to share information on, in addition to obviously having a mental health system that has those resources. But sometimes it's not somebody that's in a mental health situation. It's somebody that's evil, somebody that's angry.
Right.
And
right.
Somebody, even in those situations, oftentimes sees or hears something.
Well, I got to tell you, none better than to have you, you know, preaching up and working through that front. I got, next time I have you on, my friend, I want to talk about how AI is going to help and assist in that. I wonder about that world. But none other than Sheriff Mike Bouchard, thank you so much for joining us here today on the Paul W. Smith Show. And I look forward to seeing you and breaking bread with you sometime soon.
Love to, my friend.
All right.
Take care.
We'll be right back with Focus and Paul W. Smith just after this. We're back. It's WJR's Game Day in the D, your chance to roar when Detroit hosts New York Sunday, November 23rd at Ford Field. You could win tickets, transportation courtesy of Metro Cars, and $100 to dine at Buddy's Pizza. To enter, download the free WJR mobile app. Find the secret keyword, then text it to 1-800-859-0957. For more info, visit WJR.com. Well, I'm sitting up here in the Golden Tower and overlooking this amazing city. You got to have goosebumps when you walk into this town this week. We got the Tigers, we got the Lions. I mean, sports are kicking off. The energy is electric. You can feel it. There is no question. Our city of Detroit is a place to be, and it's just fun. It's just fun. I mean, I know there's a lot going on in the world, but right here in this place, sometimes you can just enjoy yourself and have some fun. And that, to me, none other better to talk about than one of my dear, dear friends and partners, Christos Mosidis. You know, Christos, my brother, you have to tell us, how exciting is it to be in Detroit? And when you think about it, as a family owned for the London Chop House, Fish Bones, you name it, Greek Town, Eastern Market, you have to be, I don't know, pinching yourself a little bit.
Todd, it's a great pleasure to be here with you. Obviously, I love to pull W, but glad to hear your voice on these great airlines. I'm telling you, Detroit is really humming right now. It's been a tough run after the COVID kick in the butt, but right now we're back in high fashion. Sports teams, development, automotive. It's really, really a great time in Detroit. And it's not just about the downtown. It's all the neighborhoods. It's the Eastern Market. It's Corktown. It's News Center. It's a great time to be in Detroit.
I know that you have your pulse in your hands in a lot. I know that you are constantly, like me, you're always working. You're making things happen. And you got, you know, you're full of energy. I had the opportunity to go down and look at Southwest Detroit, see what's going on down there. You know, that we don't talk about that a lot. We don't talk about, I mean, we hear about the train station, how beautiful it is, how amazing it is. But all the development that's happening, you're down there. You got structures down there. Tell us about that and what's coming in. If you had to project the future, what do you see as far as commerce and people bringing their infrastructure into Detroit?
Well, listen, I tell you, it's great what happened, you know, with Gilbert, what they're doing with the Gilbert family at Hudson's. It's exciting what Ford's doing at Michigan Central. We are spread out with myself and the family, the Gutierrez family, been longtime developers in Detroit. My wife, Elena, my brother-in-law, Nico, my mother-in-law, Maria, all very active. And I tell you, Southwest Detroit is a great area. We've got industrial holdings down there. And we've basically taken some old classic Detroit industrial and put in a partnership with New Lab and also Beacon Manufacturing to take those creative ideas inside of New Lab and let these brilliant engineers and visionaries create what they're doing on the computer and then build inside of our warehouse these manufacturing startups. So it's hard tech space, building drones, building robotic pallet jacks. The amount of technology that's happening is incredibly exciting. And for me to be a part of that manufacturing might of Detroit that's never gone away but sometimes gets forgotten is extremely rewarding. And what happens is that you bring people from around the world, not just around the country, but around the world, into Detroit, feed off of that, and then they move their families back. Mm. And then they start buying properties in Detroit. And it doesn't have to just be in the core, right? It can be in Southwest, which is a great, you know, Hispanic area that is now, you know, becoming even bigger and brighter because you've got areas like North Corktown that's had some vacant areas being developed. So it starts filling in those 139 square miles of Detroit into a great neighborhood that fills in these gaps, creates energy in all these areas, and I think gives a much bigger imprint than just the Central Business District.
So true. So, you know, I had the great honor and privilege of working for Mayor Mike Duggan when he was the Wayne County Prosecutor's and at the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office as the Wayne County Prosecutor. And one of his big things, one of his hallmarks back then, even back then in those days, was to take down abandoned homes, take down nuisance and abatement issues within the city of Detroit and build up the city of Detroit. And he started doing it as a prosecutor. Obviously, he's carried the torch as a mayor, and I'm sure he will as a governor. But the key that you just mentioned, it's not just about the business structure within what I see every day as I you know, walk around the downtown, but it's also that structure that you see that's happening within, you know, the confines of 189 square miles of the city of Detroit, 139 of the, you know, and so you have your pulse on businesses. I mean, how many times are you entertaining new companies from around the world to come into Detroit?
Well, I think we have to do our part, you know, and be cheerleaders for the city. You know, sometimes that bad rap is still out there for some strange reason about Detroit, but I do my best to do the Christos tour of Detroit and show them the neighborhoods, show them the manufacturing, and also the sexy stuff, the lemon chop house, the fish bones, you know, we got what we're doing up in New Center with Hotel St. Regis right next door to the Fisher Building. But what's really been exciting, too, is also an Eastern Market. You know, you've got another traditional neighborhood of Detroit.
Yeah, talk to me about that.
Everyone loves Eastern Market. It's for, you know, every makeup of person. I don't care your age, your color, your creed. It gives something for everybody. And so what I've done recently with a bunch of my partners is we bought in 2020 an old brewery from 1868. It was called the Detroit Brewing Company, 70,000 square foot building. and we bought it, and it was a cold storage for the last 50 years. So we had to gut it from all the ammonia pipes. There was no windows in it. The windows were 3 feet, 8 inches thick, those walls.
Wow.
Of cork and brick. And it was just a solid, solid building. But we renovated the whole thing and it turned into a Class A office, but also hospitality building. And so our anchor tenant is iHeartRadio. Sorry, competitor, but, you know, iHeartRadio.
Got to have competition.
You know, got to have competition for everyone to keep it honest. But I tell you, it's great. You know, 50 people down there per day, you know, and it's creating a great energy in the market on that Monday through Friday. The markets are great on Saturday and Sunday, but Monday through Friday, it brings more people. It's also because of what we're doing there, we're going to have a Greek restaurant called Kamari that will be in the building. We'll have an art gallery called Black Book Gallery. There's these beautiful, we call them the catacombs, but they're where the beer used to be stored in the basement. The 8,000 square feet down there that will be into a food and beverage destination. And we have an event space called The Market, where this weekend we actually had a Tigers watch party with Detroit versus everybody doing the Tigers versus everybody t-shirt. So you can find those online. So doing a lot to create some great energy down there.
You are, my brother. And I will say this, and I got to tell everybody out there, the best steak, I think, in town, London Chop House. Thank you, Christos. I'll talk with you soon. Love you too, my friend.
Thank you, my friend.
We'll be right back with Focus and Paul W., one of the pillars of Detroit, one of the great guys. He's quietly in the background but doing insanely amazing work. And my hat's always off to him when I see him, a dear friend, 20 years in the Naval, as a Naval officer for the United States, served in too many operations. I think he was actually called back once, as the story has it, as his, you know, back to the Pentagon at one point in time. But he served his country, and he serves the city of Detroit, none other than Lane Coleman. Lane, are you with me, my friend?
Chief Lugg, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I have to tell you, I've read your bio a million times, but every time I read it, I'm like blown away at all the things you have accomplished in your time. But we have this gem in the city of Detroit, and we have several gems in the city of Detroit, but with one that is near and dear to your heart, as you are basically, the leader, as the board chair for the Detroit Institute of Arts.
Yes, yes. Todd, you're far too kind. You're far too kind. You know, you never cease to amaze me, man. You know, Beyonce has nothing on you.
Oh.
you're the triple threat. Radio show now.
Yeah. No, man. I like the courtroom. I don't know. Paul W. just happened to call on me. It was just, I got the luck of the draw, and I'm humbled and honored to be sitting in the Golden Tower up here at the WJR for him. But no, man. So listen to me. I went to the DIA. I went to a couple functions this year, and every time I go there, Lane, as you being the chair, every time I go there, I'm just blown away. And now I just found out that they have a Native American exhibition I have to go see. That sounds insane, yeah. Insanely amazing to me. And they have a new exhibit coming that I think is going to be killer for the city. Just amazing stuff. Talk to us about the new exhibit that's popping up.
Okay. Well, right now is a great time to visit the DIA. The museum, like you just said, has several incredible exhibits on view that highlight the different cultures, voices, and stories of the community. The first one I like to talk about is the Anishinaabe, which is the Native American tribes that were indigenous in this part of the country in the Midwest. We're going to have approximately 60 pieces of art on display. Artists local that are from these particular tribes. It's going to be incredible.
That gives me goosebumps.
Oh, yeah. It's I've already seen it. It's going right now. It is incredible. The next one coming up that's going to start October 18th, we're going to call it the reimagining of the African-American galleries. What people don't realize, the DIA was a first in a lot in this country, Todd. We were the first to own a Van Gogh. We were the first to have a Matisse. Wow. We were also the first encyclopedic museum to have galleries designated to African-American art, which we started those in 2007. So what we're doing, we're moving the galleries. They were more in the back of the museum, more toward the front near Revere Court. But what's going to be interesting about the galleries, it's going to be more, I like to use the term up to date. So what happens is, from 1800 to 1980, we're going to talk about some of the older African-American art and artists, the Tanners
That's
and
awesome.
Folks like that. And from 1980, we're going to get into more of our modern and contemporary African-American artists, but we're going to put them in with modern and contemporary art, which is relative to what's going on in the world now. These artists don't want to be considered African-American artists. They want to be considered
artists.
Great artists
yeah.
from their time. Yes.
Yeah, yes. yeah, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. And so when does that start?
That starts October 18th. So that's next week.
Wow. Wow. Right around the corner. So how long have you been? We're speaking with Lane Coleman, one of our honored guests here who's served our country. And I can tell you a lot of other things he's done for the city of Detroit, but is the chair of the DIA, a jewel in our country. I can't just say a jewel in the city of Detroit. It's actually a jewel for our country when you think about
it. Oh, yes.
You know, but so what, you know, basically what else is going on with the DIA and some of the great pieces that we have?
So like I mentioned earlier, I always like to start with the Van Gogh. We just finished up an exhibition for 1 year for a local artist named Tiff Massey, and she killed it, Todd.
Mm.
She killed it. The first time we've ever at the DIA given four galleries to a local artist. So give you an example how well Tiff did. We budgeted 60,000 people in a year's time to visit the exhibit. We had 250,000 people show up to see it.
Over four times.
And the other thing that was interesting, and I don't have the exact data on this, but I'll bet you 20 to 30% of those people had never been in the DIA. And so what's interesting, you know, it's one of those things, let's get them in the door, because I would grab those young kids and say, hey, follow, walk with me. Let's go over here and see the Van Gogh, a Matisse, a Picasso, some of the other great pieces. You know, coming, we're going to bring next year, I'm being told it's the first time we've had this many Gavaggios brought together in one collection. So our museum director is putting this together right now. So he's traveling all over Europe to assemble these pieces that are coming to the DIA.
Wow.
And that's going to be big as a Van Gogh. So stay tuned for that one.
Wow. You know, the other thing that I love about the DIA that people don't realize until you go or you visit there for whatever reason, you know, they host a party. To have an event at the DIA is a special, special treat. But every time I go there, it's amazing to me, the events that the place puts on. You know, I know you're used to that stuff, but how many of, you know, listeners don't realize how great this facility is? Hold an event at the DIA.
Well, you know, Todd, the other thing I'd like to definitely let the listeners know, which I think people forget, it is free admission because of the Tri-County tax that they give to the DIA. It really affords us to do a lot of great things. We offer free busing, free transportation for our seniors, for our young people from schools. Probably 95% of our exhibits are free. And I think we take that for granted because a lot of other museums around the country can't afford to do that. So I want to thank the Tri-County community for supporting us.
Shame on any teacher that doesn't take advantage of that. I mean, you think about that. That's just beautiful, beautiful thoughts. I got to ask you before I go, let you go, is, you know, you being a former president, Detroit Golf Club, our remodel, we got 30 seconds. Tell all the people out there the new course at the Detroit Golf Club, your thoughts.
Well, folks, you got to also know, Todd and I are on the board together, and this has been a long time coming. But this thing is going to be incredible, Todd.
Oh,
I'm looking at number five, and I had a buddy in town from Houston. He said, every time you play the course, just text me. I want to know what you got on number five. It's going to be a different track. The bunkers, the way it looks. Matter of fact, I can't wait for it to get done because I'm going to take a picture of hole number five on a north course.
God bless you, my friend. Man. I can't wait. I can't wait.
I love you, Todd.
Love you, too.
Thank you, man.
All right.
Appreciate
we'll be
it.
Back right, just after this with Paul W. and Focus. We're back. It's been a treat, a great privilege and honor to sit up here in Paul W.'s chair in the Golden Tower of WJR. What a humbling experience. I gotta tell you something that's very dear and I think about often, dear to my heart, and I think on a regular basis. And I just called a friend of mine from Israel this morning. Was to ask him, what's the reality? What's the reality that you know, we're going to get these hostages back, both those that are alive and living and those that have passed. I don't know. I've heard all different types of numbers, 48, 50, 52. I don't know if we actually know a real number. But we've brought in a guest that is an expert in this area of what's happening over in the Middle East, what's the thought process and how big the consortium of countries that have come together to hopefully build a bridge of peace. If that's such a thing that can happen there, and none other than Dr. Frank Richter, who is someone that advisor to Saudi Arabia on Mideastern terrorism and the like. So, Doctor, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Todd.
Thank you so much for coming on and joining me. It's truly an honor to be with you today. As we listen to the pulse of what you know is going on right now in the White House briefing room, that the you know across the country and across the world that talks about some sort of peace and some sort of release. What say you? What are your thoughts as we come to this 2-year anniversary? I think it is tomorrow. Of
It's the 2-year anniversary 2 years ago, and this is the closest that we have come toward peace in Gaza. But there have been many attempts like this in the past, which have all failed because the Hamas agrees in principle, but the devil for them is in the details. It's kind of like in the Charlie Brown Peanuts
right.
series. Lucy would hold the football, and Charlie would go to kick it, and Lucy would pull it away at the last minute. Well, that's Hamas pulling away at the last possible second.
How do you negotiate with an ideology? It's not a country per se, Hamas. How do you negotiate with ideology?
Well, every country, if it has, even those who have leaders, have an ideology. We even negotiated with North Vietnam over a number of years. They had an ideology. What's as important as the ideology is the number of soldiers they have in the field. North Vietnamese had a lot of soldiers in the field still. We had to negotiate several years. But Hamas is down to anywhere between 2 and 15, 20,000. They started with about 35,000 when they attacked on October 7th. And for everyone killed, there's probably two or three, at least two that are wounded seriously. They may be not in the batting order anymore in terms of fighting against Israel. So they're going to be more interested in negotiating. And the big factor now is that some of the Arab states which have supported them in the past, and Iran as well, they're pulling the financial aid, at least the Arab countries, pulling financial aid, are willing to do that if Hamas doesn't go along and agree with the ceasefire.
Well, yeah, so to my question, you bring up a great point. At some point, the attrition rate of Hamas, as low as it may be, I would imagine Saudi Arabia, you know, even Syria to some extent, places that gave Iran, that gave money or backing or support to Hamas, that has to be waning. And I would imagine you tell us that has to be a big part of putting this peace agreement together.
That's exactly right. In fact, if the money is pulled, they will not be able to pay their people, Hamas fighters, and already, and people kind of forget about the West Bank. There are 2 million people in Gaza, Palestinians, but there's 3 million more in the West Bank. And for a long time, Israel collects taxes for the Palestinians, not from them, but they get duties and tariff, things like the tariffs and duties. And Israel has refused to give that money. They've done this for many years, off and on, to the Palestinians. So they're hurting for money as well. So financial is a big part of this, but the prisoner exchange will be up and center, including the 20 living hostages, which are held by Hamas right now.
So is that a belief that there's at least 20 people that are still alive?
Yes, they believe there's 47 people on the list, but 27 are believed by the Israelis to be dead, 20 left over. But part of the problem is the Israelis, the United States, is not going to get those hostages back just from Hamas. Hamas has two other rival groups that are working with them in Gaza, and they have some of those 20 living hostages, as well as some of the 27 bodies. And if they decide not to give those in, that could put the kibosh on the deal.
Tell me about the other two entities that our listeners, you know, because all we hear about primarily, unless you dive into the weeds, all we hear about is Hamas. Who would be the proxies
out
there?
The other two are Islamic Jihad and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. But Hamas is maybe 85% of the resistance, they call themselves, in Gaza. But, you know, if 15% or more are these other two groups, and they have, say, 5 or 7 hostages alive out of the 20, and they refuse to give them up, Israel is not going to give up their 250 prisoners they've held for years in the jail. The prisoners Israel will give for the 20 hostages that Hamas is holding are 250 people on, you'd call it death row, but they don't have the capital punishment. They're there for life because they killed Israelis, usually in bombing attacks on Israel over the years. Israel doesn't want to give those people up. And unless Israel gets all its 20 hostages who are alive back from all three Palestinian groups, the deal will go nowhere.
I could talk to you for hours about this topic. I mean, it's just, to me, I pray that we get all the hostages back, both those that need to be buried properly and that are passed and those that are alive. Doctor, I hope to see you and meet with you again. It's truly been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right. We'll be right back just after this with Focus and Paul W. Smith. You know, it went by too quick. I'm coming to my last segment. Can I just stay on for a couple more? No? You guys won't let me do it?
If you want to join me,
yeah.
Todd.
Yeah. Hey, listen,
you got nothing to do.
I got to tell you. You know, we got Ryan on with me. I got to tell you, this has been a insane treat for me. I mean, so, I'm an older guy, right? So I grew up, you know, with JP in the mornings. We had that going on. Paul W., you know, so this is like, you know, if my dad were alive today, he'd be, that's an honor. It is.
Todd, I was telling you the story. It was my stepdad. When I first got this job at WJR, which, again, all the same feels that you have walking in this studio, I had the first time, I still have every day. I've been at Fox 2 for 22 years. I've been on TV for 25 years, following my passion, following my dream. It was only until I got hired here at WJR, my stepdad says, son, you finally made it. And I'm like, dude, what are you talking about?
For your pops, this is it. This is the place, see? And so that's what I got the goosebumps with. This is the Golden Tower. This is where all the people, you know, that you listen to that were part of your car that, you know, so whatever. I'm driving all over the place to get going to clients, courtrooms, whatever I got to do. What do I have on? WJR.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. So it's been, seriously, a humbling experience. I privilege, honor, have you, be with you. How geeked are you for what's coming down the pike here with the Tigers? I mean, I'm excited to go to a game. I'm excited to just be part of it.
There is nothing that brings people together better than sports. It doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat, white, black, Catholic, Muslim.
Right.
Insert the race, religion, creed, a political affiliation, whatever it is. You are sitting next to and cheering for the same team. And there's nothing, there is no topic, Todd, that you can do that with and collectively cheer like sports. And that is one of the reasons why I have such a passion for sports, because you throw all the other stuff out the window.
Right.
They don't care what you wrote on social media the day before.
Right.
They don't care about who you commented on. Are the Tigers going to win or are they going to lose? This is a celebration here, and I'm so glad the Tigers beat Cleveland, because now we get home games. And tomorrow and Wednesday, these 2 days in Detroit, afternoon baseball in Detroit.
Think about that for a second. I mean, we're going to be – it's epic, epic to think about how exciting the Pulse is going to be here, because my office is right down the street.
Oh, my gosh.
And all I want to do is sit down on the curb and have a cigar and just listen to the music and the roars.
I think that's exactly what you should do, by the way. cases can wait. The clients can wait.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's to me, I've been through the thick and thin here for the past, 30 years of coming downtown. And this right now for me is, this is what it's about. And the fact that not only do we have the Tigers, I've held season tickets with the Lions for 25 plus years. I don't miss a game. I will tell you, I think we win Super Bowls with defenses. I think the defense yesterday was insane. Was out. We had some bad plays here and there. Gave up some. I think we stopped playing 60 minutes of football.
No doubt.
60 minutes of football. You got to keep it up all the time. I think there was just a lapse of a mental letdown there because they thought they were killing them.
They were up by so much they just mailed it in, and that's just human nature.
Right. But that, the Lions, the Tigers. Oh my.
I think the Lions are the best team in football. And I don't think – I don't want to say it's not even close, but there's not a team I would rather have be my team than the Lions. If you look around the NFL and you could say, okay, you could be a fan of any team, you could pick this team to win the Super Bowl. If your life is on the line, I'm picking the Detroit Lions. Offense, defense, special teams, they have everything you can ever want. And we talk so much about the Lions losing their coordinators last year. Ben Johnson to Chicago, Aaron Glenn to the New York Jets. The Lions are actually averaging more points this year than they did a year ago with John Morton. And yesterday in Cincinnati was the first game in Lions history. They've had 3 interceptions, 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles.
A safety.
A safety in one game. First time they've ever done that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kelvin Shepard.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, underrated. We need 1,000%. The thing about the league, if you look around, there's a lot of superstars, right? There's a lot of superstars out there. Kansas City, right? Buffalo, right? We got a lot of great Philadelphia, right? But they don't have that team, I think, that Detroit has. And I got to give that to Campbell.
No doubt.
I want him to coach the Ryder Cup. If I could figure that out. If I could get that cat on the Ryder Cup, they'd be spitting bullets.
Isn't he something else, though? Like, just as a leader of men, the way he walks into a room and commands that room and everybody just wants to follow him, it is a special trait. He would be a great case study on what it takes to fire men up and lead people, just as a pure leadership example. Dan Campbell, there's nobody better on the planet to have that job than Dan Campbell.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, from just looking at it from the outside in, this guy, I think, came out of the womb playing football, right? He was in diapers playing football. Right. There's no question in my mind, And then if not, he was out on the farm doing something. But he was there's a saying in farm areas, farm boy tough. That means when you're fighting, like where I came from in Ellen Park, uncle, all right, you had to stop, right? Farm boy tough, they didn't stop. He's got that farm boy tough mentality, and that, he has just lived, eaten, breathed, understood the chemistry. So when you think about this, college, we used to say you had to motivate the college players because they weren't getting paid. You didn't have to motivate the professional players because they weren't getting paid. Go do your job, will you? This guy has figured it out to motivate those guys getting gazillions.
No doubt. And it's a special characteristic that he has. And we haven't seen here ever.
I know. I got to tell you, true, true treat. I look forward to listening to you. Thank you so much for joining me on the last show. Paul W., my friend, wherever you may be, thank you so much for letting me host your show. Everyone out there from the Golden Towers, it's been a pleasure.